This is Bob Fetrakis with The Other Side of the News, brought to you by thefreepress.org. WCRS Community Radio 98.3 and 102.1.
This is The Other Side of the News with Bob Fetrakis and Connie Goodell Newton on WCRS 98.3, 102.1.
Well, as always, we'll be talking about The Other Side of the News, but if you're interested, and I know Connie is, in many events that bring you The Other Side of the News, Tuesday, February 26th, so if you're hearing this on Monday, the 25th, put this down on your schedule. Money and Medicine. It's the Free Press free movie sponsored with the Columbus Film Council. It's at 7:30. New location, the Arena Grand Theater, 175 West Nationwide Boulevard. And here's something you may find interesting, Connie, as a woman of childbearing age.
Yes.
In one area, they're comparing a part of Utah where Mormons live, and in another area, they're comparing the kind of inner city of L.A., and there's 30% more early induced pregnancies and cesarean sections, based on the fact that the insurance pays for it. So the medicine,
right?
And the people out in the Mormons are like, well, you know,
they can afford
traditionalists.
It?
No,
they're, oh, no.
They're losing money. They would actually get paid more money, and they're going, well, we think there should be natural childbirth, and you shouldn't. They're just doing it because it's convenient, and it's covered,
and
they get paid more money for it.
Yeah, sometimes it's convenient for the doctors.
Absolutely.
It's not, it's really, like, childbirth is a really horrible experience for a lot of women in modern medicine. When it's not natural, they use, like, a lot of, you know, they cut, which is not necessary. Women are able to give birth without necessarily cutting, unless it's, like, a high-risk emergency issue.
But
so,
what if there's big money in those procedures and the insurance will pay for it? Give them the infection.
Right. So, you know, we've seen in the past 1,000 years or so, and particularly the past couple hundred years, you know, women used to be midwives, and they were the people who actually helped women give birth. Then with the medicalization of childbirth, this isn't really current news, but with the medicalization of childbirth, men were starting to become doctors and licensed, and they were taking power away from women, and they started cutting on women and giving, drugs to, like, take away the pain and stuff. But I've heard, you know, from some women who are reclaiming childbirth that a natural experience is possible. There are midwives who are licensed now, so it is possible to do natural childbirth.
And that'll be touched on in the movie. It's like, I've got a golf time of 4 o'clock. Let me induce your pregnancy early. And not only that, they'll make more money. Also on Thursday, Connie, a documentary by Bill Moyers. This Thursday, February 28th at 7 o'clock at the State House in the atrium, that kind of glass area in between the two houses. And this is dealing with ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, sponsored by the Cokeheads. I mean, the Koch brothers, model legislation for reactionary people. All the gun laws, all the repression of voters, which we'll talk about in a little while, is all going to be documented, where those ideas come from. The secretive American Legislative Exchange Council.
ALEC.
Spanning the political spectrum from neo-fascism to ultra-conservatism.
They basically write the legislation and think it up. They have committees, secret committees of people who conspire together to make the most evil laws possible. And then they go and lobby your senators and your congresspeople and say, here's some model legislation. Let us make your job easy for you.
It's already written. You don't have to think. We met with some oil barons, some big oil.
And this is what they recommended. We highly recommend that you take their advice and our money.
And not only that, you can come on and chunk it. We'll pay for it. The food's good, and you can be one of us.
Yes.
All right. But speaking of model legislation from ALEC, part of that has spread across the nation. 33 states adopted legislation that represses voters, makes it easier. In the Free Press, again, the February issue, the broadsheet, some numbers came up, Connie, and this is a project that you've been working on for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of public records. But these are the public records that are now out there. 17% of the people who cast provisional ballots, their votes were not counted.
Hmm.
So as we go to take a look here, again, 34,000, over 34,000 mm-hmm. voters in Ohio didn't get their vote counted. But in Franklin County, 1,901 voters were rejected because they were either in the wrong precinct or the wrong polling location. Now, here's the problem. When you go into a polling place, you know, you don't get to pick. Like, I don't get to go in and go, I'll take the double wide. I'm kind of a big guy. I'll take the double, you know. They
the big voting booth.
Yeah,
they have to have reasonable accommodations, you know.
They tell you where to go. So if you're in the wrong precinct at the right polling place or in the wrong polling place, you don't come in with a database on you. The poll worker has it.
Yeah.
Why aren't they directing people to the right place to vote? They're being paid to work the polls.
Yeah, you think, I mean, they must be claiming that there's some kind of, like, liability on their part if they tell people to go to the wrong place or something. But really, that just wouldn't make any sense. Because they need to tell people where to go. Otherwise, they're being negligent.
Right, and they have a electronic poll book called it, and it's on a computer. Mm-hmm. All they have to do is look it up. Here I am, keyboarded.
Oh, yeah, the Republicans were in
there. You're at the wrong place.
I mean, the Republicans were in there with their laptops and iPads looking people up, so why couldn't the poll workers do it?
And here's another interesting one in Franklin County, 839 provisional voters lost their right to vote because after, you know, signing in and signing the ballot, they forgot to sign.
Yes.
When they turned it in, they turned it in the outside envelope, unsigned, or they signed. They just rejected it. The person accepting it knew they needed to sign it, but didn't tell them to sign it. Or in some cases, they signed where it said, do not sign below.
Mm-hmm.
So your vote for president doesn't count. But the trained poll worker, the person getting the check, you know, if you go to the, you know, to the Bureau of whatever, particularly the, you know, motor vehicles, they don't give you a driver's license unless you sign. They tell you to sign if you forget to sign in one spot.
Of course, they're not going to let you out the door with your paperwork uncompleted.
Right, but that's what they're doing in the polling.
But they'll do
place.
That at the voting register, you know, the voting place.
I see you're a
polls.
Black voter at driver's park.
Well, voting paperwork isn't totally filled out, but we'll just let you go. It'll only make your voting invalid, but who really cares anyway, right?
And again, this is being done overwhelmingly in the inner city precincts where people are not being told, and they're accepting these provisional ballots when they know the outside envelope has to be signed.
Yeah. So, that's really, that's a shame, and it does seem like it should be the poll worker's responsibility to assist the voter who, you know, isn't able to figure it out in a nonpartisan way. Because I have the feeling that if there was some kind of, like, nonprofit group or something that would help and assist voters in that way, that it wouldn't be allowed. I mean, is that legal? For nonprofit groups to go in and do the same
thing.
Well,
they'll arrest you.
Exactly,
this is
right?
Ohio.
Yeah, exactly. That's
you're
what
within
I'm trying
100
to say.
Feet of
yeah,
the polling
place. Do that. So,
Connie, I'm glad you're helping that
right,
person by
exactly.
making sure their vote is counted here.
So I would
assume the position. You're under arrest.
Under arrest. I would say if there was some public interest organization that wanted to help people vote who maybe weren't literate, you know, to do it. I mean, then, you know, or just simply didn't know that you had to sign on this line in order to vote. Then, you know, that would be great if there was an organization that would do that. But, yeah, I think they would probably get arrested.
They would be arrested. This is Ohio.
Oh, wonderful.
They threatened to arrest the United Nations
observers. Great.
Another big event, Connie, and I know one close to your political value systems. Ohio is not for shall. March 6th in Columbus, Ohio. Hold your state legislators accountable.
Lobbying day.
Tell them Ohio is not for shall.
Yes, lobbying day.
And I know Connie will be there raising the key slogan, no fracking way.
No fracking way. No fracking way. We're going to let this shale into Ohio.
Shale, no. We won't go. So they're going to be holding, as you pointed out, a lobbying day, a blitz on that day. So if you're a global fractivist, and I know you are, you bring your family. Your mom's living in France, is she not? She would strike me as someone sympathetic to fractivism.
She told me about a wonderful anti-fracking display they had at the Eiffel Tower, at the Trocadero. The French people were wondering what would happen if they fracked Paris.
In the springtime.
Yes, Evian and Perrier would be no more.
We'll always have fracking in Paris.
So... and there's also a lobbying day later in the month, an environmental lobbying day. I believe it's maybe March 16th. So that one is a separate event. I'm planning to hopefully do one or both of them.
Okay. And what's going on the 16th?
It's also an environmental lobbying day, and part of it is going to be taking place at the Athletic Club of Columbus.
Oh, all right. And again, a lot of events going on, and people should, of course, support them. And you can find out about them at freepress.org, and particularly in the Free Press broadsheet. But to find out some other interesting things happening, Connie, you've been involved in some newsworthy events lately, particularly the arrest of fractivists in New Matamoros, Ohio.
Yes, I didn't arrest them, but they were arrested, and I represented them at their arraignment. There were 10 people, so I was, I guess, the only attorney that the legal group could get a hold of and who was available. I tried to contact a few others, so I started driving at 4:30 or 5 in the morning to get to their arraignment, and all 10 have pled not guilty, and the pretrial will be coming up next. So,
What are they charged with?
They are charged with trespassing. One person is charged with resisting arrest. So all misdemeanors at this time.
Okay. So hopefully it'll stay there. There's a tendency, and this is from my perspective, the Madeline Fitch case, where the local prosecutor massively overcharged her with, in this case, inducing a panic.
Yes.
As we argued, of course, she was inducing sanity into the debate by saying, do not put this radioactive, toxic fracking water, which they won't allow in Pennsylvania, do not put it into the water system, the water table of Ohio.
Right. So, right now it's at the misdemeanor level. Hopefully it will stay that way.
Mm-hmm.
We're hoping for an easy resolution because trespassing, should be a trespassing case should be a pretty easy resolution. So we're hoping for a quick and easy one.
All right. Let's hope so. And if anyone wants to read more about it or contribute to their defense fund, where would they go?
The website is Appalachia Resist. It has some, you know, a summary of what happened on the day of the protest, and a place where you can donate. So definitely click into the website and donate. The defendants, you know, a trespassing charge could result in a fine, so they may need money for fines and court costs. And also, just to, you know, 10 people means they may need up to 10 lawyers. So transportation costs for people to come, you know, it really is, even misdemeanor charges are a pretty big deal. So it's important to, you know, support them by, you know, helping them pay their court costs and fines. Because I really feel that this type of nonviolent civil disobedience is, you know, a good way to express our, you know, how we feel about fracking and the poisoning of our water table and the destruction of our natural resources. This is The Other Side of the News with Bob Fitrakis and Connie Goodell Newton on WCRS 98.3, 102.1.
And speaking of water pollution, and we believe it's the right of all people, including those in Ohio, we're not exempt, to drink clean water and breathe fresh, clean air. The Free Press cover story, Beautiful Ohio, which comes courtesy of Bill Baker, Frack Free Ohio is his group, points out that oil and gas executives dined recently while the Mahoning River reeked of toxic frack waste.
Gross. Toxic waste. Rivers can be so beautiful, but not if they have frack juice in them.
No, and again, you don't want to mess with the frack juice. Crane's Shale Summit 2013, a recent event, while these oil and gas tycoons, robber barons, were meeting these industrial executives, 500 of them, plotting the future of fracking in Ohio. Toxic fracking wastewater was slowly flowing down the river in Youngstown, Ohio, and this was coming into the Mahoning River there. The Ohio EPA documented this and indicate that workers with Hard Rock Excavating Company dumped brine. They call it brine, but it's,
right,
but it's not salty water. It's
no,
really more than 600 chemicals, and a lot of this water has radioactivity noticeable within it.
Yeah, you know, I was actually looking at the website for a certain fracking company, and they referred to this toxic chemical bath as salt water. They actually stated that it was salt water. I suppose because brine, I mean, brine is such an innocuous sounding term. It's salt water. It's what you put your pickles, you know, how you make pickles, you use brine. Brine shrimp are the, you know, sea monkeys. They're like little aquatic monkeys who wear coats and jackets and have kids and stuff. So, I mean, brine sounds so innocuous, but it's actually this frack juice, which I guess also sounds innocuous, but it's really toxic chemicals that who knows what it does to you.
Well, according to Baker and Frack Free Ohio, a lot of this was traced back to Ben Lupo, who owns DNL Energy. Initially, Lupo denied involvement. When the toxic dumping was discovered, it was the Ohio EPA and the Department of Natural Resources that decided not to notify local officials.
Oh, dear.
Thus impairing the health of the people in the Youngstown area.
Isn't that some kind of obstruction of justice or something? Not, I mean, don't they have a duty to report?
Well, here's the problem.
That sounds criminal, Bob.
You remember that Dick Cheney exempted a lot of this fracking from the clean air.
Oh, thanks,
and clean
Dick.
Water. The Darth Vader of politics, remember? He had a secret energy task force. And one of the things is the people who frack are exempt from federal laws, clean air and clean water.
Yeah.
So, but one would wonder why the state officials wouldn't tell the local officials in Youngstown that your water is a toxic stew. And it's D&L, the same company that was responsible for the injections that caused the earthquakes in Youngstown that occurred in 2011 that many of us are familiar with.
Wow, Bob. You know, that's really incredible. Earthquakes should not be happening in Ohio, for one thing. I mean, that seems pretty obvious, right?
Why would you put, in polluted injection fracking water?
Why are we allowing a company to do that to us? Why are we allowing a company to come in and cause earthquakes in Ohio and to pollute our water? It's just crazy. And so you look and you wonder which regulatory agency is responsible for this, and it's the ODNR and the Ohio EPA, right? And so why are they allowing this? One thing, when I was thinking about the pollution of the water table and these earthquakes and things, you know, I just wonder if it, like, having an international law kind of background, like, is this crimes against humanity? I'm wondering, how many of the elements does it meet for crimes against humanity for them to be doing this or other type of crimes?
It seems to violate all customary international law regarding how an indigenous population, particularly the people of Ohio, are being treated.
Like me. I'm a concerned water drinker.
Now, it was interesting that Jack Shaner, the Ohio Environmental Council, brought up the fact that 91% of the wells inspected in Ohio
have violations.
They haven't completed the inspections.
Oh,
they're allowing these people to inject this toxic stew, this fracking water.
Essentially without being licensed?
Right, essentially, yes.
Ooh.
I mean, it's like an honor system. But why don't we call it what it is? Illegal toxic waste dumping.
Yeah, they're illegal dumping.
And again, the state of Ohio, all it sees is money. We've talked about this before, but they're now going to frack under, like, Seneca.
Yeah, you know, I really think that this is going to cause billions of dollars of, you know, in cleanup, all these, you know, the violations, the hazards. It is, in order to clean it up, it's going to be a cost of billions. It's hopefully going to be more money than they've made.
Well, but they're not going to pay for it. That's what they know. Yeah, they call it externality. Their whole goal is to pass the cost on to the local people who are going to end up with the cancer, end up with the health problems.
Right. And, you know, they do a lot of work, I think, trying to sell fracking to the public. You know, they say, oh, we have to have jobs, these darn hippie activists who don't care if you have jobs. So,
you know, that whole kind of stereotype. Like, we can have jobs. We could have good, clean jobs. We could have jobs building wind turbines. We could have jobs building solar panels. We could have jobs building solar shingles. We could
Absolutely.
Have green, clean, renewable energy.
Yeah, we could have solar panels and wood-burning stoves, and people could bake bread and have their own bakeries. There are some great, like, local bakeries.
Including the Angry Baker.
Yeah, there's the Angry Baker, Dan the Baker, who sells his bread at the community market in Clintonville. Patty Cake Bakery.
Is it Dan who makes the artisan bread, the sort of old-fashioned kind of medieval bread?
I think so. You know, at the North Market, we have a lot of, you know, artisanal food, you know, prepare. So there's, you know, artisanal pizza and pretzels and bread. You know, the Greener Grocer has local produce. Anyway, so green jobs are possible and great.
And sustainable.
But really, I mean, I think the problem with the dialogue that the frackers and the anti-environmentalists are pushing, the problem is that they're presenting a false choice. It's a false dichotomy. It's jobs versus the environment. And that's absolutely not true. It's a fallacy.
Yeah, because the long-term aspect is who's going to want to live in a state with polluted groundwater, with high levels of health problems, with carcinogenics. Moving on, we should note that on February 4th, earlier this month, was the 10-year anniversary of the famous shoe banging at the Columbus School Board.
Oh, Bill Moss.
Bill Moss,
yeah.
Yes. The legend. We should note that it was Bill Moss who banged his shoe, and well, people obsessed on why he was such an angry black man.
Oh,
they forget
why
to
indeed.
Remember
that we live in Columbus.
He was banging his shoe in part because of the corruption of the system.
Absolutely.
$20 million missing.
Absolutely.
He raised the allegations of them rigging data, of the non-transparency, where he couldn't get records even though he was on the school board. So, in retrospect, God bless Bill Moss.
Yeah.
May he rest in peace.
Yeah.
He tried to blow the whistle.
Yes.
On the corrupt Columbus school board.
Yes.
And it took a decade for his ideas to come forth.
Right. Yeah, I think the shoe banging was really a historical moment in Columbus history. I remember that. That was before I was involved with the Free Press. and I do remember Mr. Bill Moss and the wonderful things he contributed as a Columbus school board member.
Well, I actually saw the shoe he was going to bang. It was a very nice tasseled loafer. He was very proud of, he liked to shine his own shoes.
Yeah.
It had, because he was a military guy. He was Soldier of the Year. People forget that aspect.
Wow.
So I remember he only used the finest shoe to bang on the table.
Well, what
and
a
I
gentleman.
Don't want to say that I advised him in any way on pre-banging activity. I don't want to be accused of being involved in some conspiracy.
To bang a shoe.
Shoe banging.
I mean, it's really a great symbolic speech, a great act of symbolic speech.
And
I
if
think.
You were going to bang a shoe, Connie, you're known for your style. Around court, I've seen you dress up. What type of shoe would you have used?
I don't know. It's a really tough choice. I think I would probably get some of those toe shoes that have the separate toes. Maybe like a Mary Jane style with the strap across the front, just because I have a real problem with oppressive heels and women's shoes, and so it would have to be a comfortable shoe because I wouldn't.
Connie would not use any shoes that would jut women's buttocks out and make them targets.
Crippled. Make them crippled.
She is not. She's also defends the Americans with Disabilities Act.
Yes, I'm
said,
not in favor
not
of
wear shoes
crippling
that will
high heels.
Cripple you.
No, wear
That's
comfortable
good.
Shoes.
I think I would have used
but,
something in a yeah. shoe that was made in America that paid a living wage.
Yeah.
None of this Nike.
Right, no Nike.
Sweatshop. We got a 7-year-old chained to a machine. None
Aww.
Of that. I would have used a made in America shoe.
Yes. Yes.
That didn't have a high heel, because I don't think guys, particularly even transvestites, should be crippled with the wrong shoe, Connie.
No. You know, there's a reason why most men don't wear high heels, I think. It's because they're really bad for your feet, and they don't have to.
So Connie Goodell yeah. Newton.
I don't have
sheds
to either.
Light on the shoe and its role in symbolic protest.
Yes.
And, of course, Bill Moss borrowed that from Khrushchev. Khrushchev,
yeah.
who banged his shoe on the table at the UN to protest cool. the fact that the People's Republic of China did not have a place on the UN Security Council. So Bill was not the originator of that idea. So again, God bless you, Bill Moss, and keep banging at it, activists, and I mean here with shoes and pots and pans and drums. And I hope all goes well with the fractivists.
This has been The Other Side of the News with Bob Fetrakis and Connie Goodell Newton. on WCRS 98.3 102.1.
And let's get out there and stay active. No fracking way.
No fracking way.